This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brooke Wire, you are it. And Brooke, you are.
Styled by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Brock, I know you are famous for your comps between baseball and football. Some days it's going from baseball to football. Some days you're going from football to baseball, but you're famous for your comps.
Yeah.
I thought I would start off today by making one.
Oh.
Defense in baseball, Brock.
Defense in baseball.
Is akin to special teams in football. You take it for granted until you don't.
Yeah.
Everyone knows it's the third phase of the game. Yeah. But it's real easy to ignore until it's right there staring you in the face. Mm-hmm. Don't you think?
I think that's a very good comp.
I think it's astute. I'd like to call my own point astute.
When did that hit? When did that hit you?
Last night, watching the Mariners struggle with their defense, I was like, you know, they made a bunch of changes this offseason that were going to make their defense not as good. We talked about it. We mentioned it. But everyone is, appropriately, I'm putting myself in this category. I'm not trying to put myself above this. You get real concerned with pitching and offense, pitching and offense. And those are the two things that are going to, you know, change whether you win or lose games, because you think that's what most affects how many runs you score and how many runs you give up.
And those are pretty easy to see, pretty obvious to the eye. That at bat, is it a strikeout? Is it a hit? Is it a home run? That pitching, did you just give up a bunch of runs or did you just mow a bunch of guys down? Pretty easy to see.
Yeah, but unfortunately, they're not the entire story, which is why I think, you know, a lot of major, you know, modern teams talk more about run prevention or run scoring as opposed to just, you know, offense or defense or batting or pitching, because otherwise you leave out defense, you leave out base running. Things that can absolutely affect the outcome of games. The Mariners have played exceptional defense for the last couple seasons.
Yep.
Very few errors, lots of nice plays, generally just clean baseball defensively. It's just been part of their run prevention success. And the reality is, when they decided to rearrange things this offseason to try to build a different team with some different skills for the same amount of money, they had to make some sacrifices. And one of the sacrifices I would say they made was defensively. They are not as good defensively as they've been over the last couple of years in left, in right, at second, and at third. And through the course of the first six games, we've seen some of those issues raise their heads.
Yep. Yeah, I think a lot of the defensive metrics, kind of the next level today, even like to say, like, not just runs scored, runs saved, outs made that are kind of extraordinary outs made. And boy, this group's going to have a very, very hard time doing that. I mean, to really give you like, oh, man, look at this guy. This guy's playing such elite defense compared to the mean that he's actually saving you X amount of runs. That's going to be hard to imagine no matter how much infield work Perry Hill and those guys spend. I mean, Rojas just does not have, he has a second baseman arm. Urias right now does not have an infielder's arm, right? You know, Mitch out there is a guy you're going to want to protect and protect his health and everything else. Yeah, Canzone should be better. He should be better.
Doesn't have
He's
great
a good
instincts.
Enough athlete. What's that?
Not great instincts.
Not great instincts, yeah. And then, you know, Polanco's played 15 years professional baseball over there at second base. So his range is just not what others are. Yeah, it's complicated. So when you did not want to give up any of your pitching, and I applaud them for that, and I praise them for that, they did not and were not going to give up their top-tier pitching to transform and change this team, because that is the foundation of it. And I stand right next to that, and I do. I applaud that. But when you decided to make that decision, then you've got to rob Peter to pay Paul.
That's right. And so they did that. Okay, fine. Like, I'm totally willing to accept that their defense is not going to be incredible this year. And there are going to be games like last night where the defense is going to cost them. Although, oddly, there were zero unearned runs scored in that game because of the home run, because of kind of the way things went afterwards. Your pitching didn't help out the defense any more than the defense helped out the pitching. But here's the thing. They're going to make some errors this year. Let's all just kind of accept that now, because the defense that they're putting out on the field is just not where it was over the last couple seasons. Okay, fine.
So you're going to miss some kicks. So special teams analogy, you're going to just miss some kicks.
It's going to happen.
Yes.
But what you banked on was that you were going to be improving your offense by doing so. Mm. So you need to hit. Right? Haniger has made it worthwhile. Yeah, all right. He booted a ball last night, and there'll be others that he won't get to this season that other right fielders will. But he's hit well enough where you go, all right, I'll take that trade.
Mm-hmm.
Canzone? Mm-mm. Hasn't. Rojas or Urias?
Urias?
Polanco? Hasn't.
Mm-mm.
Simple as that. So,
you want to tell Brock about your confession yesterday?
Urias one that I kind of like Urias. Yeah. I don't know. He hasn't done anything good, but I kind of like why there's something about him that I kind of enjoy. I like the way he swings. I like that he's aggressive.
We weren't supposed to say that more.
I know. Yeah.
I like that he looks like Divish in a uniform. Truly. If Ryan Divish put on him, and I told Divish that too at spring training, I'm like, you know what? I figured it out. If you put on a baseball uniform and you ran out to third base, you would look exactly like Urias.
I like the way he attacks the ball. There's something about Urias that I kind of like. I'm not like, you know, I understand the major, major holes in his game. This is not a prediction of success necessarily.
Bless your heart.
But I'm kind of rooting for that guy. Okay, I kind of enjoy him. Are the Mariners going to improve defensively? Probably not. It's not going to be as bad as last night, obviously, but am I the only one who wonders what it would look like with Polanco at third and Rojas at second? Not because I haven't really seen Polanco play third. We've been told he's not particularly good there. Okay, fine. Yeah. But I don't think Rojas is great there either. And wouldn't you rather only weaken one position than weaken both?
Hey, did those metrics as preseason, all the numbers, number crunching and calculating and season totals, do they factor in defense? Does everybody Zimborski over
course.
There? Is that, they
yeah,
do?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's all factored into their war.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, okay. All yeah. right.
He factors in everything, Brock.
He does.
Injuries, he does. Defense, yeah. base running,
My
all of it.
Computer's powerful.
He's it's very, it yes, it factors. Yes. It factors in whether or not there's a likelihood that a player is going to need to take a few days off or, you know, a paternity leave or something. Like gotcha. Everything okay. is factored into that. Yeah.
Okay. And what do you factor of Luis's first two starts?
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier. Of all the things that have happened in the first week of the season, the first six games, most of them are not all that concerning to me.
Mm-hmm.
They've struck out a lot. You know how I feel about it. Yep. The power has not been there. I guess I'm a little concerned about that because they also, in making some of those robbing Peter to pay Paul moves, subtracted some power.
Mm-hmm.
Brock, just quickly, I'll get back to Luis in a second. I asked these guys this question earlier, but I'll ask you just in case. How many base runners did the Mariners have last night off the top of your head?
Nine.
More than that. They had 11.
They had 11. Okay.
11 base runners last night. It was, I believe, 12 base runners.
Okay.
They had 9 hits, 2 walks,
yeah.
and an error.
Yep.
They had 12 base runners last night. Cleveland only had 14. It's not like there was a major discrepancy in terms of how much traffic they each had on the bases. But they didn't have any power.
No.
They didn't have any pop. No. You got to hit home runs, and that's another one of those things they kind of took away. So that's something I'm going to be watching this year. Okay. I do think that there's a question mark about some of their power.
But Luis?
It's the one thing I'm watching that I'm going, he hasn't quite looked like Luis, and I don't know what,
is
look.
Is it command? What is it? Is it?
I would call it command.
Efficiency, yeah.
Yeah, his command has not been where I kind of expected, but the stuff still looks pretty good.
Yeah, it still moves. It's still 96, 97. But then there's a meatball out there, right? Or there you just lose a little bit. Man, just a bunch of them are out of the zone, making it pretty easy on those hitters, right? It's remarkable. Like Bieber last night, how many times did he give you just a breather? And obviously that ump played too and continued to give him an inch here, an inch there, 3 inches here, because he is just around the zone all the time. Talk about pressurizing an opponent, much like George Kirby will do today. It's the same thing. Like there's just no, okay, that's a ball. Right, I can 6 feet out of his hand. I know right now. I don't even have to make a judgment on this. Right, it feels like there's a bunch of those with Luis, and you saw Bieber last night, and Kirby, and even Logan in his first turnaround. Like, no man, I'm all over you the whole time.
Yeah,
and you're just not going to get a break. So
yeah, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't say that. You know, I now think Luis isn't going to have a good year. That would obviously be a huge exaggeration, but. I was saying earlier, is it rare for a hitter to have a bad week? No. especially not the first week of the season. That seems right. pretty normal. So the guys who've had kind of lousy first weeks of the season, I'm like, yeah, all right, that might continue. It might not. Mm-hmm. But that's not abnormal. Mm-mm. It's a little bit more abnormal for an ace pitcher like Luis Castillo to go his first, you know, to go two starts in a row and not throw a quality start in either of them.
Except with him, that's been a bit of his track record.
Yeah, that's true. Early
overtime,
in the season.
Yep, overtime and cold weather and everything else.
Maybe that had right. passed as he had kind of, you know, come in better shape, yeah. didn't have to work himself up. So yeah. I don't know, man, who the heck yep. knows? He could come out and throw a no-hitter in his next start and would be like, yeah, everything's just fine. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's a little bit of a watch, I guess, on that, probably more than anything else that we've seen this year. All right. Let's come back here, Brock. Give everybody everything they need to know. And then got some questions that came up over the course of the day yesterday that I think we need to work through together. It's coming up. It's Brock and Salk. Seattle Sports on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Yeah, it was kind of an ugly night at T-Mobile. Mariners didn't do a whole lot right. The defense struggled, problematic, couple of errors and a couple of other issues. It was a tough day, certainly, at third base.
Here's a bunt on the third base side, and a beauty picked up by Rojas to throw to first, and it gets on by Ty France. And here comes Rocchio in to score from second. Stephen Kwan lays down a bunt on the third base side, picked up by Rojas, and it gets on by Ty. And the Guardians now lead by a score of 4-0.
Yeah, things weren't looking good at that point. They didn't end particularly well either. It was a tough night for Rojas, but give the guy some credit. He did meet with the media afterwards. He didn't duck it at all. He was pretty accountable.
Yeah. He was getting down the line. And, I mean, it was a pretty soft bunt. So I felt like I had to hurry, but I think looking back on it, I had a little more time than I thought to just, you know, field it with two hands and get a good throw off.
I kind of like the way he handled that, yeah. to be honest with you. Like, yeah. Here's what I was thinking. Here's why I made the play I did. Yep. I went back, I looked at it, and I realized I was wrong. Good on yep. him, man. I didn't like the play, but I really do like that reaction to it.
Well, and he bounced right back, right? He made a nice, like, double play. I think he had five or six yep. putouts, made a nice catch in the dugout. And so, he is a pro. There's no question about it. Back to special teams comparison to defensive baseball. He's a legitimate pro. He's a legitimate kicker. But he's just not going to... He's not going to kick a bunch over 50 yards. I mean, he just does not have that kind of arm talent to play over there. And we have been pretty spoiled, man, between Seager and Suarez. We have seen that position played at a very, very high level.
I think Beltre before that, too. I mean, yes. there's been some pretty good third basemen. For all the problems they've had in left field and at second base, there's been some pretty good third basemen here in Seattle. Meanwhile, the team is 3-3.
I don't think we've played our best baseball yet. I see some signs of it coming together. But just not consistently yet. So
certainly not. They'll try to win the series today, win the homestand. George Kirby on the hill. Rubber match, 1:10 start. Pregame will be at noon here on Seattle Sports. A couple of small moves yesterday. Dodgers claimed Taylor Trammell, so he is now out of the Mariners system. Remember, he didn't make the team out of spring and didn't have any more options.
Bob, super sad.
I know, it's a bummer. It's too bad that didn't work out. I mean, he just couldn't seem to put all the pieces together. But Mariners also bringing in former Cy Young Award winner Dallas Keuchel is going to be a triple-A guy for them. Posted a nearly 6 ERA last year in just over 37 innings in Minnesota. Not the same pitcher he once was, 36 years old, but apparently went to Driveline this offseason. So I don't know. Maybe there's something. Maybe.
There's a veteran that knows how to start.
At the very least, it could be kind of fun to see Dallas Keuchel if they need him.
Little Tommy Malone.
I know, poor Tommy.
Here's the second thing you need
to
know.
These numbers are just nuts. Iowa LSU.
Give it to me.
We wondered if it was a watershed moment for women's hoops. How about this? It averaged 12.3 million viewers, which means it peaked at over 16 million. That's a lot of people watching that game. More than any women's college basketball game in history. More than every ESPN college basketball game in history. More than every baseball, hockey, Major League Soccer game last year. More than every NBA game last season except for one. And more than every college football regular season game last season except for one. All of that, Brock?
Yeah.
And it wasn't on network TV. It was all on cable. That's incredible.
It's unbelievable. And even the game that followed, USC and UConn, had nearly 6 million viewers as well. Which
more
is
than that. 6.7? It averaged, yeah, 6.5.
Yeah, so an extraordinary number. So, yeah, buckle up and get ready for UConn, Iowa. Probably going to get you. And once you start getting to those numbers, do you know what happens? You know what happens with advertisers, with television, with management, right? The number for a college football game is 4 million. Mm-hmm. If you can get 4 million viewers for a college football, you are making significant money, and everybody is really, really happy. You get to those kind of numbers?
I wonder if ESPN, Disney, et cetera, will end up putting one or both of those games onto ABC.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, I know they're not scheduled to be, but if you were them, why wouldn't you? Like,
correct.
Is there a way? Maybe you can't. Maybe you've got your schedule all worked out and there's no way to do it, but
I don't know.
Sure seems like you would want to take full advantage of this. I saw Andrew Brandt reminding everybody that this might be the best bargain in sports. Like, they're not paying that much for these rights.
Nope.
And getting that kind of a return on the investment, pretty darn cool.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Oh, it's Nostradamus Brock. Yesterday mentioned the name LaVisca Chenault. Let's hear him say it.
What's up with it, guys? LaVisca Chenault Jr. checking in. Happy to be here. Excited to get to work. Shout out to the 12.
Man. Sure you pronounce the T?
I'm pretty sure. He just said it pretty fast. He's a DeSoto, Texas guy. I'll give you a little more of that in Blue 88. I had him a bunch at CU, Salk. He's a rare talent physically. Super, super, super gifted. And, yeah, I mean,
wiggle?
Through him.
He's got some wiggle?
He's got a little wiggle for his size. Certainly a little more speed than a DJ Dallas. A little bit more burst. And that's kind of what Schneider had said to Bob and Dave last week, is that, hey, man, with this new special teams phase, there's going to be some opportunities. And that guy has got to get from 0 to 60 like a Tesla in a hurry. Like, just step on it, and all of a sudden, it is there. That will be a huge, huge advantage. And yeah, he's got some pretty talented athletic traits.
I would imagine D. Eskridge wasn't wild about that signing yesterday.
Probably not. But right. D., what have you done over 3 years to...
Well, I wasn't suggesting
getting any trust or equity.
Yeah, no, I get that. I just wondered who would be affected most, and I assumed it would be him. All right, that's everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show. Yeah, so some more on LaVisca coming up at 7:45 in Blue 88. Yes, Brock?
That 12.3 million that watched. And I know, again, Scott Ruick, the coach at Oregon State, said after their game, like, oh, everybody's got to – it's got to be about more than basketball, but this team is just about basketball, and we're not drama, and we're not stories. Well, that shows you that actually it's a good thing. It's a good thing to have polarizing stories. It's a good thing to have a villain. It's a good thing to have a hero. It's a good thing to have a team from Iowa. It's a good thing to have a team from LSU. It's a good thing to have just all of that, because that brings in more than just the basketball fan. Right, that brings in the casual fan that says, I gotta see this. That brings in my pastor friend that watched Caitlin for the first time. Like, I gotta see this level of stardom. I gotta see how she's gonna, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it's okay. We say this a lot about baseball over the years. Like, come on, baseball, it's okay. It's okay to have personality. It's okay to, you know, to have conflict. It's okay to have villains. It's okay to have emotion. It's okay to have a bat flip. It's okay to have all of these things, right? Rather than just the essence of the game of baseball. No, you need more. You need more. And storylines galore right now in college women's basketball are propelling it to astronomical viewing heights. It's pretty darn cool.
Very, very cool. All right, coming up, Brock, we kind of ran through this yesterday morning before you jumped on, but I think I got to ask you about it, because I think my answer to a question is going to surprise everybody. That's next on Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Power through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
All right, let me try to surprise you with an answer to a question that we started to chat a little bit about yesterday, super early, and that came from John Middlecoff. He's an ex-scout, right? John Middlecoff used to be a scout in NFL. And he was kind of thinking through, hey, the Chiefs and the spot that they're in with the number 32 pick, and he made a little suggestion.
What if the Chiefs, do I think they would trade pick 32 for DK? I wonder if they'd think about it. Now, I don't know, you know, big picture, part of the space, you know, signing their own guys, right? They have some young core pieces on the offensive line, a guard, a center, a good linebacker that are not going to be cheap. But... listen, I know the way Andy thinks. Right? Andy likes sweet players. Right? I mean, think about some of the guys the last 15 years that he's used a lot. From Deshaun to Macklin to Shady, to what he did with Jamal Charles, to drafting Tyreek and obviously Kelce. I would imagine he likes DK Metcalf. And think about DK Metcalf with Patrick Mahomes. Now, it takes two to tango. Wouldn't John Schneider just want DK Metcalf on his team? To me, part of the draw of Seattle is the nucleus they have. Maybe they go, hey, it's a good receiver draft. Now, there are financial ramifications on doing this, but you never know.
Would you trade DK Metcalf for the number 32 pick in the draft? My answer, Brock, no, I would not.
That's not enough.
No, it's not enough. And I know there's people who are surprised. Most of those people think I hate DK Metcalf and just want him out of town.
Why do you hate him?
And those people couldn't be more wrong about this take at all. I think DK is an incredible, dynamic, interesting player. But I think that if you want to kind of change the way your team is built, mm-hmm. he's the best asset you have.
Mm-hmm.
I'd need more than the number 32 pick, though, I would think.
You think so?
Yeah.
Here's there's been history between these two, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it was the first history made that was like the first Seahawk that was their own and homegrown and a great player that, you know, you were kind of in this situation, right? Where, okay, how do we do this? How do we, at that point, they needed draft capital, right? They were going into that draft, I believe, with almost nothing that year. So they had to move from Frank Clark, and he ended up, and we knew he was going to be a good player, and we knew he was still a dynamic dude. And he went to Kansas City and was super productive for them and some of their Super Bowl run and everything else. Mm-hmm. And the Seahawks got, I think, a first rounder for that one. So they have done that deal in the past. I'm kind of with you. That felt about right for Frank. I don't know. That just doesn't feel like enough for DK. And yet, Salk, you see Ladarius Sneed go for a fourth rounder, right? I mean, you see talented players go for mid round. So I think the market actually would say, and I think that's why Middlecoff brings it up, like, no, you know, from a market standpoint, this is where you start your bidding. I really like this house, you know, and I'm going to offer $25,000 below what mm-hmm. they're asking. You know, like, it's a fair offer. I think a first round pick.
I didn't say it wasn't a fair offer. I just said I would say no to it.
Because it's just not enough for you.
It's just not enough. I mean, like, at that point.
Even though you know what that pick can turn into, even though that could then turn into a second and another third. And we talked about this draft and all of these starters, Salk, that you're going to find. You know, quite possibly between.
Yeah, I still think that would be just a little too much risk for me.
30 and 70, too much risk?
Yeah, I think that would still involve a little too much risk for me in terms of kind of
the only way you do that is if Ryan Grubb says to John Schneider, listen, man, this dude from South Carolina, okay, this guy from name it in the mm-hmm. third round, like I can get 90%. Isolating him and putting him in one-on-ones like I would do with DK. I can get you 90, 85% of DK Metcalf if you get me this guy in the second or third round. And now we reset your salary as well. And now we have this guy for 4 years at a rate that looks nothing like $18 million a year.
Yeah, I don't know. I think because of the way the salary cap works, I don't think there's a ton of cap savings that come in it.
Yeah.
So that's never really been the crux of my argument, despite a lot of people telling me that it is, even though it's mm-hmm. not. Mm-hmm. I want them to reset what the team looks like and how it's built.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether having another 32nd pick in the draft is enough to do that.
Okay.
Right? I don't think trading 16 and 32 gets you into a position to nab one of the elite quarterbacks if that's what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's enough to do that. Now, maybe if you start adding to the 32nd pick, if it's a 32nd pick and a second round pick, am I willing to have that conversation? Yeah, a whole lot more so. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether Kansas City does that, mm-hmm. but sure, that becomes a much more interesting debate. I just don't think that's enough for me to say, yeah, that's worth
yep.
it.
Yep. And I think Monday's going to be the start of some kind of cool stuff as well. I mean, they're going to get a few weeks here to evaluate where all of this is. Mm-hmm. And obviously the first phase of the whole offseason is just lifting and conditioning and everything else. But, you know, you get guys back in the building. And, man, is it going to be a very different vibe in that building, right?
Sure.
And I think for some, it's going to be refreshing. I think for a DK Metcalf, with all of the kind of stuff that he has been around, all the history of it, like, I think it could be a refreshing thing for him, for Ryan Grubb to say very specifically, DK, this is what I'm going to do, man. This is what it's going to look like. Okay, why do you think Roma Dunze just went in the top 10? Right, Roma Dunze was there for 3 years with Jimmy Lake and the previous staff and everything else. And obviously, you know, we bring a Penix in. But look at what I did and look what I'm going to do in this system mm-hmm. to create these one-on-ones for you. I know that there was a lot of that fodder the last couple of years and over time. But, like, this is specifically, you know, I was, you know, you jumped on and I jumped on with our buddies out there in Chicago. And it seems like everybody around the country has jumped on with the people in Chicago, because between pick 1 and 9, they're kind of the epicenter of this draft from a value standpoint. And jumping on with those guys, and they were, you know, like late in the interview, they said, hey, tell me about Shane Waldron. And I was like, oh, geez, didn't Jackson Smith and Jigba already do this, right? Like, you know, like,
have you already heard about enough about him?
I mean, you kind of know about Shane. He's brilliant on a whiteboard. He's terrific. He's a lot of things. He's got to grow in his conviction and his command. Ryan Grubb, that's not going to be a problem. Like, Like, and I think it's why he won over this interview process, and why a Mike McDonald, who had no relationship with him, was like, yep, John Schneider, who had background in the same city, but he had no, you know, ties, didn't ever work with him before. But I think both of them were to the point where, like, wow, this is fun stuff right here. And he's going to be able to utilize DK in a way that, Salk, maybe if it was Shane Waldron running it back again, I would say, yeah, 32nd pick does feel somewhat fair market value for a guy that you don't know how to totally use in tremendous ways. No, by the way, you have Tyler and Jackson, a first round pick the previous year, that you need to elevate within this system. So I think a good, fair debate. I can totally understand where you and probably that text toy comes in and says, no way. Not for 32, not for one pick am I going to move on from DK Metcalf. Not going to do it.
Yeah, they got to be a no on that. I just, it doesn't change, though, my desire to see them alter the way the team is structured, if that makes sense. And I...
Do you feel like they have the capability of doing that between now and April or on draft day? Do you think that there is a capability? Do you think that there is an opportunity maybe on draft day, Salk, for one of these teams that really wants a top-end receiver and somebody sneaks in and trades up and all of a sudden, like, do you feel like, because I don't.
No, probably not.
I'm not getting those vibes. Nope. I'm not really getting those feels that all of a sudden, you know, I saw somebody else over the weekend propose a Tyler Lockett. Somebody would, I don't think so, man. That wouldn't make any financial, you know, sense. There would be a big kind of dead cap number that you would carry in that trade. So I don't know, man. I don't get that sense that there is some big move that, you know, is going to really shift the way. And I know where you're coming from, and I think in many ways they would say the same thing, that yeah, man, I think we're going to build this thing from the inside out, maybe a little bit better consistently than we've done in the past,
but it's hard to say we want to build it from the inside out and then at the same time be thinking, and I don't know who they are, this is just what Middlecoff said, oh yeah, the real strength of this is in the dynamic receiver core draft within your receiver group. Like, okay, but that's not, if that's the draw, that's not what you're saying you want the draw to be.
Yeah.
And you know me, man, like if you wanted to build a team that was built along around the wide receivers and saying, hey, this is truly what we believe in every way, and everything was geared towards a team that threw the ball all over the place, I'd say, all right, it's not my favorite system, but go do you. Let's see if it works.
Greatest show on turf.
It's when you don't have, I don't know, when you don't have what's the right word, uniformity almost, right? When each of the different parts don't feel like they are all building towards the same goal, the same stated goal, that's when I just, you know, I get my concern meter up a little bit.
Yeah. I think some of that in retrospect, fair or unfair, is, hey, man, this is where the market is. This is where the talent was. This is where, you know, DK
doesn't
has
that
turned.
Feel reactionary?
DK has turned into this kind of a talent.
Doesn't and that you, feels reactionary to me?
A little bit. But, you know, I think we've heard this before. You can't let talent leave the building. That's what Middlecoff is saying there as well,
agreed,
right?
And I don't think they should, which is why I'd say no to this deal.
Right.
I get it. I don't want them to let talent leave the building. If somebody offered me number 32 pick for DK, I'd say no. Why don't you throw in your second rounder as well and let's have a conversation?
Yep.
But yeah, for one pick, no. I'm probably not doing that.
And this is where, as we've listened to John over the last few weeks with Bob and Dave, this is where if there is kind of one position where the rubber hits the road on this, where it's like, no, I'm not doing that. It's guard. It's interior offensive lineman. Like, there's just not enough talent. That's just not a talented guy. Like this running back or this tight end or this receiver or this quarterback or this safety or this linebacker or this pass rusher, right? Or this, you know, unbelievably powerful, dynamic interior defensive lineman. Like, yeah, I don't think many times guards are evaluated in that same kind of talent. It's shifting. And the pay scale is shifting, as Fuel the Eight said, man, $100 million guards now. Damian Lewis is $60 million guard now. Like, you know, some of those things are shifting. But, yeah, man, finding and just accumulating and continuing to assembling talent, difference-making talent. That, I think, is the priority over the next couple weeks. I do think they'll sign an interior guard. I really do. So they're not going to be sitting there stuck and having to overdraft somebody on that interior offensive line in the mid rounds, and they can just sulk, really go into this thing. You know, this draft's going to feel a little different in 14 years. You said this yesterday, and, you know, we didn't really have time to react to it. It is. It is. Because when John comes out with Mike McDonald, you know that the authority and the power, not that, John's hitting him over the head like, no, this is my pick and we're doing this. Because all of that hay's in the barn by the time they get to draft day, they're all on the same side of it. But it will be a little different because you're not going to have Pete's influence going, Johnny, what about this guy? Johnny, I really like this guy. Johnny, let's do this.
Right.
No, we're going to do this and we're going to build it this way. And it's going to feel a little bit different, I think, on draft day and draft weekend for that reason.
Well, we are just a couple of weeks away. Tomorrow is Thursday, right? So three weeks from tomorrow, we'll start to see what the Seahawks are going to do. Field Yates was with us yesterday, and he was definitely another guy that's on the Troy Fautanu train for sure. I love the idea, believe me. I mean, like, that to me would truly be a further investment into what you're trying to do offensively and the type of team you want to be. The only problem with it is that it means you then don't pick again until the third round.
Salk, you'd have to develop the Mike Salk rule.
Like you'd Larry Salk. Turn off the draft.
Once that pick is done, then you just go to bed.
Ugh, yeah.
Or then you just go watch golf. Then you just go to the home course. Like you don't even, right? You have your own Mike Salk rule right there. I'm not even going to pay attention and watch all these other names of all these guys that we've talked
just
about.
Just turn it off.
You're just totally done.
That's a good idea.
Yes. If Kyle
Brown is awake and listening, I don't want to work day one or two of the draft. I don't want to have to hear all the other names. Day three, fine. I'll come in on Saturday. Nobody cares about that anyway. Like, I'll come in on Saturday. This draft apparently stinks after the third round. So whatever. I'll come in and talk with whatever you want. But I don't want to work on Thursday or Friday and have to hear all these names.
No,
it's
Thursday.
It's only going to drive me crazy.
Thursday's the buildup. So Thursday.
No, I don't want to. I don't want to have to hear who could go 17, 18, 19, 20. I don't want it. Nope, it's just going to make me mad. Okay. Let me just be happy. If it's Troy Fautanu, I'll just be happy. He sounds great. Exactly what the team needs. I don't want to work on Thursday or Friday. And by the way, nobody wants me to either.
No.
You want to hear Bob with his golden pipes, Wyman with his analysis, Brock with his analysis. I don't want to work. I don't want to be a part of it. I don't want to. Just let me be at home crying or whatever. Like, don't let me see it. Does that sound okay?
You're not going to be because you're going to be out golfing. You're going to watch.
I'm not going to golf during the draft.
Yes, you will.
No, I won't.
If they take Fautanu at 16, that is exactly what you're doing.
Go golfing at like 6 at night?
I knew I was not going to be a first-round pick. I knew I'd have to hear Tim Couch, Don McNabb, and Culpepper. So you know what I did? I stayed up till 3 in the morning that night before, and then I tried to sleep until noon. Because back in the day, the first round was kind of done by noon, so I didn't have to watch any of that.
Because it was all Saturday, right? Saturday and Sunday?
Did it work?
No.
No.
No, you woke up anxious to see what happens and get mad about every one of those guys.
Cry, Grandma.
There you go. Let's do some Blue 88.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88. We take you to the field as Brock Heward breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
All right, three good football questions for Brock. We call Blue 88, and we will start here, Brock. Since you've been talking a lot about the draft, what are the Bears doing differently this year? What's the deal here?
Well, their GM, Ryan Poles, put out a story yesterday that I think we all know where they're going to go with number one. I think that's been pretty much set in stone, and Caleb Williams is going to have 3 weeks to continue to build to that day and have meetings with them and hit the ground running. The real question is then what do they do at 9? So Poles was saying to one of their media partners, like, we have set up kind of a law and order in our conference room, our draft room, with two very distinct sides really arguing their case for X player. And this side's going to argue their spot for that player. And, you know, part of me is like, well, that sounds really cool. But isn't that what you've been doing?
Right.
Isn't that what every room is doing? Now, I could see the difference is this kind of capital they've got with 1 and 9. And because you take, you know, Caleb at 1, what do? Do we build up a defense now? Do we take the best defensive prospect that's going to be on that board as other receivers and QBs are going to go 1 through 8 and you get your number one pick? Or you go out and get the best tackle in this draft to make sure you protect his blind side? Or do you go get Rome Odunze and get him the absolute, you know, number one weapon that is left at that point?
Like, no,
there is actually some pretty significant strong
if
debate.
You're Chicago, you probably trade the 9 pick.
I don't think so.
Really?
No, because remember what Matt Miller, who we're going to talk to in 45 minutes, said. There's about 18 legit difference-making first-round guys in this draft.
You don't think you might? I mean, depending on where the quarterbacks are at, you don't think you can still stay in the top 18?
I don't know if you can stay in the top 18. Yeah, More than likely, somebody's going to come in, right, and wants to make sure they're in that top 10, top 18, and has their guy.
Yeah, but at number 9, what if you got the 15th pick, the 13th pick, the 12th, but trade down with Denver?
That might be possible, but then you also could lose out on the guy you really do want. We really do want Joe Alt. We really do want Rome Odunze. We really do want, and all of a sudden, if we go from 9 to 13, that dude's not going to be there, because more than likely, somebody else really, really wants the same guy we really, really want. But yeah, great debate. I thought it was a little blown out of proportion, because I think that's what goes on. That's exactly what the Seahawks are doing down at the VMAC. That's exactly what the Rams are doing down in LA. Like, that's what they do at this time of year. They debate and they debate and they debate until there's consensus in the room. So when they walk into that war room on that Thursday, they all know the plan at hand.
All right, question number 2. Seahawks did make a small move yesterday. They sign Laviska Shenault, I believe. Here he is introducing himself.
What's up with it, guys? Laviska Shenault Jr. checking in. Happy to be here. Excited to get to work. Shout out to the 12, man. Let's get it.
Who is he?
He's a unique guy, man. I had him a bunch in college. He's thick. He's like 6'1", 230. Was what he was at the combine. And so for a receiver, right, we see so many of these receiver body types that we kind of get used to seeing. And he was really a running back that was playing receiver. And at CU, when I had him 2, 3, 4 times, like, man, this guy is really, really special. He's got some unique, but taller. What was Golden? Maybe 5'10".
Okay.
So yeah, kind of a 6'1" Golden Tate.
Okay.
Big, thick, strong running legs and powerful dude. And he was out of DeSoto, Texas, and he had a teammate with him at CU, and he's just kind of, he fits CU. CU's kind of an eccentric place, and he's kind of a diverse dude, and you know, he's just marches to his own beat. At times, the sense of urgency wasn't always there, Salk. I think he got drafted late first round. I mean, he was a high draft pick because those traits are off the charts. But you haven't really seen it in a couple places. And that word that comes to mind for me is a word I use with receivers now quite a bit. Urgency. Jackson Smith and Jigba last year. Right, the broken wrist certainly set him back, and he started the season a little bit slow. And I guess you could call it confidence. You could call it playing fast. You could throw a bunch of things in terms in the bucket that have been used. But like, come on, man! Like now is the time. And if you're Laviska Shenault, like you sat on the market for quite some time, you have one of the richest receiver drafts in league history coming in here. There's going to be so much supply of so many talented players. Like, hey, bro, this is like your time right now to make it. And I would say the same thing to Dee Eskridge. And I would say the same thing to, gosh, what's the name of the other big receiver for the Seahawks that we liked 2 years ago and then last year got hurt and really had a hernia and just totally affected all season. We didn't get to see anything out of him. Like, there's 2, 3, 4 guys in this roster. Yep, there you go, Derek Young. Like, it's now. It is now or never. And if it's never, you're going to be in the UFL with Deion Kane and a bunch of these guys that are very good players, but their time and their window passed. So you better make and maximize this opportunity if you're Shenault.
All right, question number 3. So this is from Bo Nix. Where is this from? This is Bo Nix.
He was with your buddy. Your buddy, the old ESPN radio guy. That does this podcast now. There's about 100 of those guys.
Oh, Russillo?
Russillo, there you go.
Okay, yes, here's Russillo's Bo Nix on with Russillo. Brock, I want your reaction to this.
In a sense, the hostility and the maybe the unhealthy pressure that is added to, you know, 18 to 22-year-olds by you know, outside noise and fans. Like, it's almost like an unhealthy obsession in the South. I mean, I was that way growing up. I thought it was, you know, life or death football. And you move out here and, you know, you play the game as hard as you can, and you got great passion for the game. And, you know, it's just a little bit more laid back in a way. And it's a lot more like, you know, we're proud of the person, the person you are out there on the field. And like, if you give a great effort and if you try really hard, and you know, obviously we're out there to win. Nobody goes out there to lose and look bad in front of a bunch of people. But I think that's the difference.
Mm-hmm. Could be a lot of GMs that don't love that, Salk, and decision makers. I mean, I love the transparency. I think Bo Nix is a grown man. Bo Nix is... he's not the 18 and 19-year-old that he was at Auburn, where that was overwhelming. But it's going to bring into question now, hold on a second. So what happens when you get out of Eugene, Oregon? What happens when you get out of that very easy environment where the pressure is very, very low, the expectations are very low, and you get thrust into Denver, Colorado? Ask Russell Wilson about the expectations in Denver, Colorado, or yeah, Dallas, Texas, or, you know, Green Bay, Wisconsin. You know what it is in Green Bay? You know what it is in Denver? An unhealthy obsession, a cult-like passion and zeal for their professional teams.
Yeah.
That, yeah, I know it was a big deal in Opelika, Alabama, but you just wait till the NFL, which is on every second of every minute of every day for 365 days a year.
I didn't quite hear it that way. I understand your point. I heard it a little more as like him growing up and realizing what he needs to do in order to get through some of that. I don't think I hear him saying, I can't handle it. I thought I heard him saying, now I know how to handle it.
You think, but you couldn't handle it then because of all that outside noise. And you really were not in an incubator where you had to handle it in Eugene. You got kind of the best of both worlds. You literally got to go as far away from Opelika as you could go.
For sure.
Unless you wanted to go to Honolulu, but you know.
I should have.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't? All right, there you go. That is today's Blue 88 with a little argument thrown in just for fun. Just a little argument.
And I love it, man. I love Bo Nix, and he is 100% right, and you're right. Like, that's not about, oh, this is overwhelming for me. I couldn't handle it then. I feel like I can handle it now. I'm just saying, if there was an unhealthy obsession in the South for the SEC football, it is magnified.
Well, I will say, Brock, it's a perfect lead-in to our next conversation, a story that we heard yesterday from Jeff Passan that does bring into question exactly what Bo Nix is going through and even recalls the words of the great Lloyd McClendon. That's next on Brock and Salk.